Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We're feeling good, great about our contribution this cycle, and we are just getting started. We're building around the country on the ballot in Texas and Connecticut, and hopefully a dozen other states by the end of this year, and marching towards the national convention next year.
You're going to sneak up on this country, I believe, on a forward party. Just sneak up, like, wait a second, there's six different states with some ranked choice action or some sane people coming out of there.
It's going to become the norm. Let's turn the dials down on the bad incentives, turn them up on the good, and fix American politics in a genuine way, not in this, oh, we eked out another win to survive.
Our guy
won. Living on the edge is no way to live sustainably. We are back on Forward to discuss the midterms with my main man. You know him, you love him, Zach Grauman. Zach, welcome back.
Dude, good to be back, man. I've been trying to avoid you in politics. It's not personal,
and failing because I show up at your door every morning.
You loop people back in. Zach. It's a core skill of yours, is convincing people to do stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, Zach's working on a top secret project that will get a little bit less top secret in the weeks to come.
We got stuff to come.
But we're going to unpack these midterms. What the heck just happened? What the meaning and effects will be? So we're recording this at a time when they're still counting votes, which they're going to be for quite some time, but we can already tell a huge number of things. So first, I want to say I was in Nevada campaigning, and yes, on three, Nevada is going to be getting rid of the party primaries and switching to nonpartisan open primaries with ranked choice voting.
Clap it up. Okay, that's a big win, man. It's also nice to campaign and then win
and get a big W.
You put all that energy in and feel the energy, and then the next day, like, hell yeah, we did it.
Oh yeah, I was joking with someone. I was like, that was all because of my campaign.
You gotta take all the credit.
I mean, you know, it looks like
when you won the Georgia Senate runoff, you gotta take the credit for that. You gotta do.
I mean, looking at the math on that, that might have been us.
That's true. Actually, we had a lot big agent turnout for that one. Yeah.
But looking at the Nevada numbers, heck, I mean, we certainly helped. So they're still counting votes, but it's looking really, really good. And for those of you who are keeping up with this at home, what this means is that Nevada is adopting the same model that Alaska adopted in 2020, where there's no party primaries. Anyone can vote for anyone. Winner gets decided by ranked choice voting. It strengthens the voters, though I do want to also foreshadow that because of a quirk in Nevada law, essentially, the same ballot initiative will get run in 2024, and then after that passes, the change gets made because there's a legal quirk where there were two steps that need to be taken. So I will say that there's a great chance that the Forward Party National Convention is in Las Vegas, Nevada, 2024, because we need to make sure and finish this job.
Yeah, do it again.
I personally always felt like the first stage of this ballot initiative was the harder one. So I'm pumped because a majority of Nevadans stood up and said, yes, I'd like to be able to vote for anyone.
Yep.
The misinformation campaigns didn't work. When I was in Nevada, the Democrats, honestly, were sending out text messages being like, vote no on three. And their rationale was, it's too confusing. It's too cumbersome. And then people were showing me these text messages, and I was like, that's amazing. Man, come on. So there'll be this negative information campaign, But I think the truth of it won out, and I'm super pumped and super optimistic about flipping the switch for good in 2024. And Nevada, thank you, Nevada. Let's thank go, you, Nevada voters. Thank you to everyone who volunteered to help make that happen.
That's amazing. Big win for the Forward Party then. Does ranked choice voting go into play in 2024? It has to win in 2022, mingle around for 2 years, and then get voted again? Or does it get to start getting implemented before then?
It doesn't get implemented until after this thing passes in 24 because of this legal
quirk. So you got to win it twice, but winning the first one's...
was the harder one, in my opinion.
For sure.
Because again, absolutely, majority Nevadans, and when I talked to these two dudes on the strip, this was like, so I was campaigning in Nevada. I was coming out of a casino.
Where'd you stay?
I did not stay here, but okay. I was coming out of the Cosmopolitan because I was visiting a conference. And then there were these two porters who were working the front of the casino hotel. And then one of them said to the other, hey, you vote yet? And he's like, yeah, you know. And so then I just obviously was interested. So I walked over next to them and I was like, hey, guys, what do you think about question three? And then the second guy said, I'm an independent. So, of course, I'm voting yes on three because it means independents can vote in the primary.
Yep.
And then the first guy said, everyone I know is voting yes on three. And from that, I thought, these guys get it. Because these dudes probably belong to a union. They were uniformed porters at this casino hotel. And they were just like, hey, obviously, we're going to vote yes on three. And then the first guy then looked at me and said, hey, you Andrew Yang? And I was like, yes, I am.
I was going to ask
if they They did. But there was like this substantive enthusiasm for yes on three because they instinctively sensed it was in their own interests.
Yeah.
And then the parties both came out against it, but the people spoke.
The people are right. It is such a shame, but it totally makes sense that the Republicans and Democrats, like the parties don't want what you're fighting for.
The parties don't want a truly open system or dynamism or unpredictability or having to deliver for the people. Accountability. Who wants that?
It makes sense. And then I saw someone comment this on Twitter, which I'm trying to avoid. I try to just scroll through or get sports updates on. But it was something like... it doesn't make any sense that we root for politics like we do sports teams.
Yeah.
You know? True. And so, and actually it's not even sports teams. It's a sporting match. It's a game because it's just two. You don't even get the 32 teams the NFL gets. Yeah.
That's my joke is that imagine a sports league with only two teams and how do you feel about that. The other team's base?
I've said this many times. We're like, as a Bills fan, Tom Brady, by the numbers, objectively, he's probably the greatest quarterback to ever play the position from a resume standpoint. As a Bills fan, you'll never get me to really say that. I don't care. It doesn't matter how good he is. I hate Tom Brady, right?
He's the deflator.
He sucks. Those championships weren't legit. You can go down the list. But that's because I'm a fan. And so when you bake fandom into things, and I challenge anybody listening to this, like, are you a fan? Are you Team Dem, Team Republican? That doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means... there's probably some blind spots you have.
You got to know you have a jersey on, or you're at least going to respond to you know someone else's jersey. So the switch in Nevada, it made me sad that both parties were against it, particularly the Democrats, because it does end up reducing the influence of extremism and extremists.
Yeah.
Because you need to get majority appeal to win.
But the parties are okay with extremism as long as it's their extremism.
Well, this is part of it, is that the Democrats at the moment are in control of Nevada. But by the way, that might have changed as of Tuesday. But if you think more holistically, you're like, hey, sometimes we control things, sometimes we don't. But wouldn't it be great if we reduce the odds of crazy people controlling things like that? That would be a relatively
democracy collapse.
Yeah, like public spirited reception to this ballot initiative. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's hey, this could be bad for our party's ability to lock things down. Mm. So let's spend millions of dollars in legal challenges against the ballot initiative, which they did. That failed. And then, like, hey, let's try and scare people about this ballot initiative, which they tried to do and it failed.
Yeah.
And so the people spoke, and we're going to make this thing stick in 24. I will say, too, that there were a lot of people that put a lot of energy and resources behind this ballot initiative. And if it had not passed, then it's going to be tough for them just to, you know, like, get energized for the next one. Because people are people. And if you put tons of energy and time and resources into something and it doesn't work, and then when someone comes to you and says, hey, let's try it again in another state, or two states or three states, which, by the way, we totally want to do in 24.
Right.
So now you've got a version of it in Maine, a great version of it in Alaska that legitimately kept Palin out, it looks like, got Murkowski back in, it looked like. Yeah, working.
All it takes a couple of these states, like, oh, wow, okay.
Yes. Then you get Nevada. And then now we can go to some other ballot initiative states in 24, maybe even get a couple on the board at the same time, and save Western civilization.
Dude, huge, huge win for the Forward Party. So congrats to you and the whole team. It's amazing. This is where a lot of the real change actually happens, when it's the blocking and tackling, like the actual, when they say boots on the ground, this is actually what you're talking about, like getting signatures, getting this stuff on the ballot and telling people about it. Because the press isn't covering it. The parties are actively trying to
get rid of it.
It's amazing. It's one of the best parts about our system, that you can actually change stuff. People will fight you, but you can do it.
This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought, if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids, who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15 year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product. And if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. So some of the big takeaways I had pretty quickly. Number one, the odds of a Trump-Biden rematch just shot up.
Yeah.
Because Donald Trump's going to declare next week, by all accounts, this week, by the time people hear this. And the question was whether Joe decides to run for re-election. And if there had been a red wave and a repudiation of the Democrats, and the odds of Joe running again go down.
Yep.
But now you can tell Joe's freaking pumped. Mm-hmm. Joe did a victory lap for the press. Joe's like, good day for democracy.
Yep.
People sense that Democrats are working for them. And then when a reporter asked him, it's like, hey, what do you think about how the Republicans are just going to impeach you and do all this crazy stuff and have hearings and investigations? And then he played the I'll work with anybody card.
Yeah.
Just trying to poo-poo the Republicans' hostility. So Joe's feeling great.
Yeah.
It's November. He's going to have dinner with his family. By all accounts, Jill is apparently on board with another run. And so the odds of him declaring that he's running for re-election early next year, in my mind, just shot up. And there are a lot of people who are like, no, he's not going to do it. You and I have been around, Joe. The fact is, it's primarily or almost solely going to be him and his family's decision. There's no one that can make the decision for him, but him.
Yep.
And so if he decides to run, you're going to see everyone in the party establishment fall into line. And so for those of you out there being like, oh, Joe can't run again or whatnot, oh, he can. And in my mind, the odds of him running now are as high as they've ever been.
There's not a lot of meat on the bone if you're in the no, you shouldn't run camp for Joe. Like, trying to have that argument with Joe, there's not a lot of evidence for you to say you won't win or can't win. Like, the people have spoken. That's that. I will say this, a quick note on political victory laps or media victory laps. I know it's annoying, like, you're talking, oh, doing the victory lap, but politics sucks. So when you get the chance to take a victory lap, you always take it. You know, yeah. We did it a few times. You should do it.
But he almost immediately afterwards had to go on a plane to Asia. So him doing a victory lap before he jetted off was like kind of a baller move.
Gotta run the country.
But yes, the rematch that no one is excited about seems like it's on tap.
Okay, so Biden 2024. Anything else we want to talk about? Or we can also frame this in, I wanted to do like, what's like good or what's like trending one way and what's trending another way.
So one thing that is trending negatively is wave elections. Is I think trending we down, might be done with wave elections, where at this point the country is so 50-50 split. So I'll confess to you all, in 2020, I thought it was going to be a blue wave because people would be so fed up with Trump, his mismanagement of the pandemic, his antics, the sense of haphazardness, and I was like, we're going to want to move on from this in a significant way. And House Democrats not only didn't gain seats, they lost, I think it was 15 seats.
2020.
Yeah. And I saw that and I was like, wow, that's really surprising to me. Mm-hmm. And so I took from that there was like a whole lot of latent Republican or conservative energy. And so on this one, I thought that there would be something of a red wave or wave let, because of inflation and public safety being in the headlines all the time and people just being in a shitty mood. So it was like the country's just in like an ordinary state of mind.
Sure. Yeah.
There was essentially no red wave. And so what I'm realizing is that the country has these two blocks that are almost fixed in place. And we might not see a wave anymore because at this point, you're wearing a blue jersey or a red jersey, and you're going to vote. Now, some of the accounts of the midterms said that it was independents that decided this election. And depending upon the news account, they had, 30%, 35% independents. And the exit polls showed that independents essentially split evenly. I don't know if you saw that. So there is like this block. Yeah. But one of my takeaways was, hey, we might not see a wave for quite some time because at this point, everyone knows what team they're on.
Yeah. What I think is trending up, my trending up was, I have a couple, but one of the big ones was executive leadership, or let's call it, and there's a lot of headline, I'm not alone in this, but the quality of candidate mattered, which is so stupid in some ways to say because it always matters, but in a red wave or a blue wave, you have idiots winning just because they're a Democrat or Republican, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You had a couple things. So generally speaking, and I think a little more so for Republicans, if they ran a competent, strong candidate with a clear message, they rolled. And they really did roll. And that goes to DeSantis in Florida, Brian Kemp in Georgia, like rolled on Stacey Abrams, Abbott in Texas. I think the ones that are interesting is I thought Tim Ryan ran a really good race in Ohio, but J.D. Vance still rolled, and he was a relatively competent Republican candidate there. Comparatively to some of the
I'm not sure I'd characterize J.D. that way.
I don't know, compared to like, compared to an Oz or compared to a Herschel Walker. I
feel like J.D. Vance is kind of Oz-ish, personally.
Yeah, but I think as Republican, I see there's two sides of that. I can see the other side of it. I think he can. I thought his debates where he did a good job in the debates. I think his Ohio credentials are strong enough. His Republican credentials are okay.
But your general point about candidate quality is definitely accurate. Where there are a lot of people bemoaning missed opportunities for Republicans if they'd run different candidates. Like the biggest thing being the Senate candidate in Pennsylvania, the alternative to Oz, who, by the way, Oz only beat by something like 500 votes, was the Bridgewater CEO, David McClintock.
Right.
And I think that McClintock probably does perform better because his Pennsylvania-ness was clearer.
It's a different race. I mean, I loved Fetterman. The press doesn't love talking about this, particularly on the left, but I loved Fetterman before the stroke. Obviously, he was a brilliant communicator. He was on message. The problem is, like, this has nothing to do with, you're talking about a disability, right? In this sense, if it's walking or other forms of disability are different, but if you're a politician, the job is to talk. That is the job. So that's, I think.
And to synthesize information in different ways.
Yeah, and like translate information for, break down information for your voters and communicate with them. That's what you're talking about. So you had this, you know, but in that state, you had Josh Shapiro role in the governor's race.
Who was a high quality candidate.
Who was a strong candidate. So I think executive leadership, Whitmer was pretty strong.
You know, to your candidate quality point,
yeah.
There's this, and this is something that's pretty negative, is that the Democrats' strategy of boosting unpalatable candidates worked in just about every instance. You talk about Mastriano in Pennsylvania, they freaking boosted him.
Yeah.
They boosted Joe Gibbs in Michigan, who they ended up beating, and Peter Meyer would have been harder to beat, even though Peter Meyer was, you know, just a lot better candidate and human than Joe Gibbs. Bolduc in New Hampshire, they did the same thing. Like the Democrats are patting themselves on the back, being like, we're geniuses because we spent millions boosting the crazy candidate.
Stupid candidates. And then,
managed to beat them in the general, just like we drew it up.
Yeah.
And so anyone who looks at that.
We hated on them. I'll eat crow.
No, I mean, it's not necessarily because, like, we didn't hate on them because it might not work tactically. We hated on them because it was.
If it failed, it's a disaster.
Yes.
The downside risk is really bad.
You're playing with fire. and it also makes your entire, hey, we're preserving democracy argument disingenuous, because most of the time they were boosting election deniers and extremists.
Yes.
Then saying, like, hey, you know why you can't elect those guys is because they're election deniers and extremists. It's like, well, wait. They were running against a non-election denier who was like more reasonable, but then you didn't want to run against the reasonable person, so you shit the reasonable person.
Yes.
So like we weren't shitting on it because it didn't tactically make sense.
You're right.
We were shitting on it because it's terrible for the public interest, and once in a while you're going to screw up and lose to one of these people.
Yes.
I agree. Which is the opposite of what you're saying. You know, the goal should be.
Oh boy. All right. So that was my trending up. Want to stick with trending up? What else do you have that's up?
Okay. So here's what's trending. You can use either trending down or trending up on this.
Yeah.
So
as I wrote these, depending on what team you're totally on, I guess.
But here's what's trending down: Florida and Ohio as swing states.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember a couple cycles ago, like that was the ball game. You win Ohio and Florida, then you win national elections. Mm-hmm. But now, oh my gosh. How many points did DeSantis win by?
20, almost 20.
And also, as compellingly, last I checked, Marco Rubio beat Val Demings, who I regard as a strong candidate. Val Demings is a good one. 16 points?
Yeah.
In a state that was neck and neck, well, like 4 or 8 years ago?
Miami-Dade County is Republican.
Yeah, like Latinos in Florida are just like, hey, sure, I'm down. I'm down with DeSantis or Rubio or whomever. So if Democrats have permanently lost Florida, and I do not see a clear path back for Democrats in Florida, mm-hmm. It changes the national calculus. And the same movie played out in Ohio. Back to your earlier point, I thought Tim Ryan ran a phenomenal campaign, and he still lost to J.D. Vance, who I don't regard as a great candidate, by 8 points. It was significant. And J.D. Vance ran in a fractured Republican primary and won that primary with only 32%. So J.D. Vance didn't have some massive connection to the electorate that had been demonstrated, at least.
Yep.
And Tim Ryan ran a phenomenal campaign, and he still gets beat by how many?
Six points.
I mean, six is a non-trivial gap. I mean, Republicans won Ohio the last couple of cycles by 8 or 9 points. So you can say that candidate quality, Tim being good and maybe J.D. Vance not being so good, maybe comprised like a 3-point closing. So yeah. Instead of losing by 9, you lose by 6. Mm-hmm. But it shows that Ohio is essentially permanently red. That to me is incredibly important. One of like the great questions I have, and this may be a real recruitment thing for Forward, is that imagine being a Dem in Ohio or a Dem in Florida. And you look up and say, hey, I used to have a shot at mm-hmm. statewide office, but now I don't.
State. Yeah.
Now it's a wrap. Yeah. And so, like, what is my future? And I've seen the same movie play out for Democrats in different states that went from purple to red. So you have Ohio and Florida becoming red states. And then the new battlegrounds are going to be Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, which are the traditional mm-hmm. Midwestern states that Trump won in 2016. That
Pennsylvania
Democrats
might
have been
be blue.
Winning.
You've got their governor rolled and Fetterman was a weaker candidate. Yeah,
so this is why the Democrats are feeling good. They're like, we have rebuilt the blue wall of Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin.
Right.
And then add into this Nevada, Georgia, mm-hmm. and Arizona.
Right.
Those are the new six swing states. But you've written off Ohio and Florida if you're the National Democrats. This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech, who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit, generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side, where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang. And ticket splitting, to your point, was a thing.
Yeah, or voters are like, I like this guy, I don't like this guy. And that happens when you spend a lot of money, too. But other times where you don't know the other names, you just kind of check your team.
So this plays into what's going to be on everyone's mind for the next 3 weeks, which is going to be the Georgia runoff, which may end up deciding balance of power in the Senate. I think that Warnock has an edge in this runoff because Herschel Walker's numbers were boosted by Governor Kemp's.
Yeah.
Where Governor Kemp came in well over 50%, mm-hmm. was 53 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Walker was at 48. So this is your ticket splitting candidate quality thing. And now you don't have Kemp on the ticket anymore. And it's just pure Warnock versus Walker. I think Warnock probably edges it out. If I had to take a guess based upon like the level of enthusiasm.
It's a pure turnout game, right? That's how these work. So you got to have people turning out for Walker and his character, lack thereof. That's going to be tough.
Well, so this could end up being a massive lightning rod for national politics, because if the Senate hangs in the balance, then there are going to be a lot of national Republicans trying to get people to care about supporting Walker hand Mitch McConnell the Senate.
For those of you who don't follow this, it's a man who is hard line against abortion and has been caught paying multiple women to have a abortion for himself. So
listening to talk radio on the way in today, BLS. It was a Steve Harvey show.
Okay.
And so Steve Harvey said, why do you want to make Herschel Walker your senator? He wasn't even talking when he was in the huddle. It was that was funny. He was like, the running back's not even called the plays. He gets in the huddle. So that was a Herschel Walker joke. I mean, there are a lot of jokes out there. But I think Warnock has an edge and probably squeaks it out. But the political world is likely going to be turning back to Georgia for the next 3 weeks.
Yep. Trending up. Curious your thoughts. Abortion rights. And I say that this is my take. I'm curious your thoughts. I think it's fair. I think we can say now that abortion rights are going to be handled state by state for the foreseeable future.
Well, certainly the gubernatorial and the state houses, the races became more important because they can make a call on abortion rights. And there have been incredibly positive signs in a lot of different states that if you give it to voters, they don't want to restrict abortion rights. Even in a state like Kentucky, where there's a ballot initiative, and it was like, hey, do you guys want to restrict abortion rights? And they were like, hell no.
Right.
And this is a fairly conservative red state.
Yep.
The same thing happened in Kansas. So it does heighten the importance of some of these state races. But I'm happy to say that if you actually pass it to the people, that they raise their hands and say, hey, guys. And that goes to show, too, that the entire blue-red team thing breaks down when you have like a concrete decision to be made in that state. It's like, do you actually want to make it so women can't get an abortion?
Liz Plank, who's a let's call it an activist, I guess. She's been a journalist, been a lot of things. I love Liz Plank. I don't agree with her on everything, but she said something. She said, abortion, when it's vague and emotional, then people are easily against it. But when they start to see like how that works out in practice and how that affects an economy and a lifestyle and family, people are like, this is awful. Which is her point, which is good. I think, so on one hand, like there's Democrats that are going to say this was a massive win. And I think in the sense that it wasn't a loss. Like you're not going to have a red wave in national.
Though there
ban.
Was something very cynical about the way Democrats played the abortion card, because Dobbs comes out and they could have actually tried to codify Roe v. Wade and have like a certain floor, but they didn't because they wanted to use it as a political cudgel. And you know that this is what was going down because, gosh, like a month before the midterms, Joe Biden gave a major speech saying, hey, if you get me one more senator, like, we'll codify Roe v. Wade. And then that begs the question. It's like, wait, why don't you do it with the majority now?
Right?
Like, why does one more senator make the difference for you? Like, it didn't make any sense. But it was clear that Democrats really wanted this as an issue heading into the midterms, and it did pay off for them. So this is, again, the perversion of the two-party system in action, where it's like, look, the issue is worth more to me unaddressed as a weapon than it is addressed.
But I think there'll be Democrats that claim victory. Like, our candidates that were strong on abortion had great success. And I don't know if that's totally correct. Like Josh Shapiro, Gretch Whitmer, for every one of those, you had a Beto or a Stacey or others. And Abbott, I mean, Texas has the worst abortion laws in the country, or if not the worst up there. And he won pretty handily. So I don't think he was on the ballot as much because they kind of already did it. But
What's interesting is that I think Democrats are feeling good because the expectations were so negative.
That's true. Yeah.
So to the extent there's an expectation game, like Republicans are sad and Democrats are happy. Mm-hmm. If you look at the actual outcome, you're essentially looking at this deadlocked, polarized 50-50 country.
And a moderate mild Republican win.
Again, I mean, Republicans are almost certainly going to take the House by some margin. And we're in a system now where if you have the House, in some ways, it doesn't matter if I have it by 5 or 25 seats, because if you're in the minority party, you have absolutely no say and no power in anything, because there's like so little bipartisanship at this point. Now, if Republicans have a tiny margin, which they might, one of the dangers is that their margin consists of Marjorie Taylor Greene and crazy people who've already said, look, if we're necessary, then we're going to hold up all sorts of things. So in my opinion, the odds of having productive legislation emanating from Congress for the next 2 years are vanishingly low.
Not good.
Because you're going to have some version of a Republican majority in the House that isn't going to exactly be like passing a lot of great stuff. But because of the expectations, Democrats are like, phew, like we did. And you have to say, based on historical patterns, they probably expected to lose dozens and dozens of seats that they didn't. One thing to know, too, is that whatever happens in these Senate races with Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona, in 2024, it's going to be very difficult, almost impossible, for Democrats to hold the Senate, because there are a couple of seats they won in 2018 during a blue wave, the last real blue wave, that are going to be almost impossible for them to keep in 24. Specifically, West Virginia, where Trump won by, I think, 27 points, and Montana, which I think is something like plus 9 or 10 Republican. So trying to win those seats in 24, it's going to be very, very hard. So
flips for the Republicans, most likely.
So the polarization is just going to keep on trucking forward, where you're going to now this midterm was something of relief, but like 24 is going to be upon us, unfortunately, before we know it. Probably this week or next week.
Trump's
going to
announce what in a couple of days.
Yeah, and then the core problems are still very much there for us. And obviously, you know, here at Forward, our goal is to try and provide like a real genuine upgrade to our politics. So it's not always this life or death mm-hmm. clash, between these two teams.
Yep.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I have a trending down. Trending down is the, and I'm bringing this up because I want to hear your thoughts and to talk about it. But the trending down, the Democratic darlings, of the Democratic Party, specifically, I would say Stacey Abrams and Beto O'Rourke, who both lost, but lost significantly.
I want to put Tim Ryan in there, too.
I would put Tim Ryan, too, but I don't think Tim got as much love.
Oh, he didn't, for sure. But that's one reason why he's so admirable.
Yes. I would say he's getting a lot of love now because he did flip two Ohio congressional seats, it seems like. You could argue because of Democratic turnout for him. He ran a good race. I thought he had really good messaging.
Yeah, totally. Best I've seen.
But Stacey, when I say love, what do I mean by love? Like, Beto's been on the cover of Vanity Fair. Stacey Abrams has been at Lizzo concerts in Atlanta. Go down the list. But both lost like wide margins, right? What do they do next? And what does that say about Democrats in a sense? Cause I feel like the Republican darlings, if there is such thing, tend to win. Maybe Oz wasn't a Republican darling, but DeSantis for sure.
So
Abbott.
This is a very big picture question that I like, which is what the heck do high profile Democrats do in states that are unwinnable in a general election, which I'm going to say at this point, Texas looks that way. Ohio looks that way. Florida looks that way.
Yep.
Georgia does not look that way. Georgia is clearly winnable. I mean, like, Warnock may win.
That's probably the biggest knock. That's like the harder part for Stacey. He's like,
yeah. But that there's, and this is one of the structural deficiencies of the two-party system, is that if you are a high profile person in one party or the other, but your state is there's no place for you to go. And that's one of the things I detest about the way we practice politics in this country, is that when you try and figure out who's going to run for a particular position, you look around at the people who are at the level below that politically and say, which of these people has been gearing up for that? There's this entire ladder that they're trying to climb. And then, so if you wind up in a certain spot, so I'll use Tim Ryan as an example. So Tim Ryan's a member of Congress. Now, there's been some redistricting and some other problems in Ohio, which make it so that, you know, he may or may not have had a path back to Congress anyway. But what is the quote, next step if you're him? And so it's like, well, run for Senate. And then when that step proves too much, then you're looking up and say, okay, like, what is the next step for me? You can see it at every level where you look and say, who's going to run for this? And then you just circle around to the half dozen folks who are like the level below. And so there's this constant food fight for who's going to get like the next brass ring. Yeah. And that's the majority of the candidates we have. It's one reason why so many folks are hungry for someone from outside the system, because we sense that this person, do they have some deep-seated purpose to be seeking this particular position? No, it's just they've been in the game for X years and the rest of it. And so, like, you know, like, look, like, this is the next step for me. I mean, what am I going to do? Be like a city council person forever? I'm going to, you know, take that next step.
With Tim, you have, or Beto, too. Like,
Let's take Beto. Member of Congress in El Paso, runs for Senate, becomes the star because he was running against Ted Cruz.
Everybody hates Ted Cruz nationwide. They apparently like him in Texas. They like him enough in Texas. They threw a beer at him at the Astros like parade. And he sees
people don't love Ted Cruz.
He wins.
He wins every 6 years. I mean, he's not
only that likable. You're right. You won in 2018.
But it's tough because there's no natural next step for these people.
Yes.
And so what often happens with people of a certain profile, and you know, I've been in this bucket too, actually, where you know what you do as like your holding pattern, talking headed. Like some of the folks will be like get tabbed by a particular media network and say, hey, and so one very, very real possibility of this is certainly Stacey Abrams. Like, you know, will Stacey Abrams get a call from MSNBC being like, hey, hop on TV and like do stuff? But these are things that only apply to folks who are relatively high profile. And so the thing that I see all the time is that people are getting up and outed in our two-party system politically because there's just no place for them to go where they are. It's one reason why what we're doing at Forward, I think, is so important is because we can provide a long-term home and breeding ground for people who want to do positive things in their community where you can actually stay in the doing good stuff pursuit. Even if there isn't necessarily, like, you know, a spot for you in terms of the next rung of elected politics. And this is one of the diseases, too, is that what does the press do? Well, we'll just follow the relative rises and fall of like these different people. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, this person's trending up, this person's trending down.
Yes.
And you know, we're humans, so we're like, ooh, like I want to keep track of who's trending up and down. Meanwhile, the entire system is like, you know, becoming increasingly ridiculous and unproductive. but we'll all just get sucked into the character drama and like, oh, show me a video of some asshole doing something I hate. Like, yeah, I hate this person. And then it's like, oh, let me vote against them. Let me donate against them. It's, and thus, like the you know,
well, it's like this career path. Like Tim Ryan, he goes and he runs for. They tell you, oh, you're in Congress. Like, why don't you run for president? I'm sure they told us to Swalwell and Gillibrand.
Oh God,
like,
they never told him to run for president. You fucking kidding?
I'm certain political advisors. I'm not telling like the powers that be, but like their political advisors, like run for president. You'll boost your national profile. You'll get some press. You'll get on a debate stage. People will see you. And then when you run for Senate in 2 years or a year and a half. Then you have a national donor base. You've met all these big players. You have the people to pull money from. And then the national, like the party will love you because you're challenging, you know, a seat they want to win, et cetera. I mean, that's what happens. And you just kind of get left at the end. I'm not sure what you do. I don't know what Tim Ryan does next.
So this does raise a very important question, which is we opened this discussion talking about how the odds of Trump-Biden shot up because of this midterm. On CNN the other day, I said, hey, there's no way the Democrats run a genuine primary if Joe runs for re-election. Where if Joe says, hey, I'm running for re-election, in theory, the Democrats have to have a primary and people can challenge him. But no one in the establishment is going to challenge Joe.
You'll have someone on the left, I'm sure. Give it a shot.
Well, so this is what I said on air. I said the DNC is going to pull the plug on any process because there is no way that they are going to have their 81-year-old president debate Nina Turner six times.
Yes.
Which is the way it would play out if you actually had like a
maybe
process.
Maybe Roe. Would Roe do it? I don't know. He's a little establishment.
So people who are in the establishment aren't going to touch it because it's going to become this massive litmus test of like, look, like, are you really going to enable Trump to win by challenging our guy Joe? Even though, you know, a majority of Americans and Democrats would be deeply concerned about running a soon-to-be 82-year-old for president again.
After doing the most grueling job in the world for 4 years.
But you're going to see just crickets when everyone's like, hey, who wants to run against Joe? Like, everyone's going to be like, you know. Yeah. Anyone who actually is within the Democratic Party and imagines they have a future within the Democratic Party will not challenge Joe. So you know who would challenge him? Marianne Williamson, Nina Turner.
Yes.
Someone of that ilk.
Yep.
Just a total aside, I think Tulsi Gabbard runs for president on the other side.
As a Republican?
As a Republican.
Against Trump?
Yes.
Okay. Probably.
So I don't see Tulsi in this field of potential challengers for Joe. But the DNC looks at this and says there is absolutely no way we're going to have Joe be contested by these folks. So they're going to short-circuit the process. Maybe they'll say, hey, we'll have a debate if someone breaks 20%. And then if someone like Marianne or Nina got to 20%, they would just change the dial and be like, hey, I meant 30.
Yeah.
And there'll be this. So the RNC did this in 2020, by the way. They had Trump, the incumbent president. He was challenged, most people don't remember this, by Joe Walsh and Bill Weld and some other people.
Yeah.
And then the states just started canceling their primaries.
I forgot about that. No.
People didn't remember this because it's the Republicans and Trump, and they're like, yeah, of course, those guys don't follow the rules. But the Democrats will, in my opinion, do the same thing because they don't want to weaken Joe ahead of his rematch with Trump.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, here's the other thing. I wrote a chapter on this in my book, and I didn't publish it because it's part of it. But for the Democratic establishment, which really means it means a couple things, but a lot of it means political consultants. Biden's a dream. You have right now. We have an economy that most people say is not doing well. You have inflation that people do not like. We have crime that's pretty much up in every major city. That is a top issue for most of the country, and you have presidential approvals and vice presidential approvals that are not good. Yet he still had the best performance of an incumbent's political party, or at least projected right now, since we rallied around the flag after 9/11 in 2002. So that's a dream. Because it's just the Democrat,
Team Biden's feeling
to
great.
The team Dems. We keep our political consultants and talking heads in power. Republicans don't have a real strong message per se to fight. Even like if the economy's bad enough, if the Republicans had a good message, they should have won a lot more seats. The question I want to ask you is, I think DeSantis 2024 is ramping up, and
I don't think DeSantis runs if Trump runs, and I think Trump's going to declare.
Trump's going to declare. It's like the rumors. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like rumors like sourced by his team.
So I made reference to the two fields. So the Democratic primary, if Joe runs for re-election, I think it barely exists and that there's not a true process. Republicans, I mentioned Tulsi, Chris Christie, Larry Hogan, Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, Trump, maybe Mayor Suarez of Miami.
If all those people run, DeSantis wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense for him to enter that field because they would all steal from him. They probably wouldn't steal from Trump. It's the same moderate Republican vote, right?
Yeah. So I think I got to seven candidates, and there are some I did not name.
There will be more.
There will be more. So if you have Trump and his, let's call it 40-50% hanging out there, and then everyone else breaking up the other 50%.
Yeah.
If you're DeSantis, you just sit on it for a cycle, and then it just comes to you. You're the heir apparent. You get all the money. Like Trump,
he might put him as VP.
Yeah. Like Trump runs, and you're like succeeding as governor. Then, if Trump loses, then you're the next person up, and everyone's waiting for you, and everyone's happy. If you run against Trump, you wind up fracturing the base, get a lot of negative energy. I mean, yeah. Trump is very, very vindictive.
It's negative press all day long.
And vengeful. You end up taking your relatively robust base right now and splitting it in two. And then you emerge really, really tattered.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's like that's just the cost benefit, especially because DeSantis has been telling donors that he's not going to run against Trump. At least that's what he was saying X weeks ago.
Sure.
So,
but these people don't think rationally. Like we've done cost benefit analysis. I could have done a cost benefit analysis on half the Democratic field last time. Like the cost would say, don't run for president.
Kidding? The field last time was wide open. I think anyone who had any salt should have gotten into that race that we were in.
I hear you saying. My bigger point was, if you're the Republicans are better at lining up than Democrats are. And I would say, save for 2020, the Democrats don't typically easily line up behind a candidate. the joke would be, you know, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line, is what we would say in the campaign. If you're Republicans, knowing you had already lost to Biden 4 years ago, do you really run it back again under Trump? Or do they, is there not enough power to stop that?
If you were to have a bunch of Republicans say, hey, would you prefer that Trump not run? They'd say, yes. I prefer he doesn't run. But after Trump declares, then what are you going to do?
Yeah. And the reason he's declaring early is like, I don't want you guys joining. It's my party.
Or what someone said was that Trump controls the primary, but then he's a tax in the general. But then the primary comes first. So what are you going to do? And then if you run against him, you probably get steamrolled. So, this dynamic is playing out. The question still remained the same, even though this midterm, I think, was relatively benign for a lot of people. And I'm going to close with one other bright spot for Forward. And as we're having this conversation, we're not quite sure. But Adam Frisch in Colorado might have beaten Lauren Boebert, who's not cool. And this is something I'm particularly proud of because this was a district that no one was paying any attention to.
Dems didn't want it.
Yeah, well, it was deep red. So they're like, oh, like, why run someone? But Adam Frisch got enlisted to run. Forward Party endorsed him and backed him and did what we could to help him. And it looks like he might get rid of Lauren Boebert. Which would be a victory for common sense and rationality in the country. But also it shows that even in a deep red district, there are a lot of people that weren't down with Lauren Boebert as the ideological, talking head. It's like, you know what? I kind of just want a member of Congress. I kind of want someone who might, you know, actually do something.
So it's 50-50 right now. 96% in.
So thank you to everyone who supported Adam or supported Forward, because that's the kind of thing we're actually making happen in real life. You know what I mean? Like, the National Democratic Party ignored this race because they were like, you know, look, we're a dollars and cents party. And we're not going to spend money in a race that we don't think we have any chance of winning. But Forward endorsed Adam and because it was the right thing to do. We're actually in touch with him and helped get him into the race even.
That's a huge win, man.
And so it'd be a huge win. And so
it's a win that you're this close, frankly.
Yeah. So regardless, we're feeling great about it. From the Forward perspective, and we didn't talk much about it, thank you, Evan McMullen, for running a great race. We'll probably have Evan on to talk about his race and what the future holds. Thank you to everyone who helped get Nevada a huge step closer to nonpartisan primaries and ranked choice voting, and for boosting the 9 Forward Party endorsed candidates like Adam Frisch, who it looks like might have won their races. You know, like we're feeling good. Great about our contribution this cycle, and we are just getting started. We're building around the country on the ballot in Texas and Connecticut, and hopefully a dozen other states by the end of this year, and marching towards the national convention next year.
What a moment, man. No one's going to, you're going to sneak up on this country, I believe, on a Forward Party. Just sneak up, like, wait a second, there's 6 different states with some ranked choice action or some sane people coming out of there.
It's going to become the norm. Let's turn the dials down on the bad incentives, turn them up on the good, and fix American politics in a genuine way, not in this, oh, we eked out another win to survive.
Our guy
like,
won.
Living on the edge is no way to live sustainably.
Yes.
You know, what you want to do is have a rational system that we can all like sleep on easily and not just be at the edge of our seats every fucking cycle.
Amen. Some wins for Forward is exciting. Thanks for having me on, man. It was fun.
Thank you, Zach. We'll have you back all the time. The people have spoken. The people love Zach.
Everyone in doses. You know what I'm saying? Beautiful. Love you guys.